Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello and welcome to the EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. My name is Elisa Canu and I am a neuropsychologist and researcher at the San Raffaele Hospital in Milan. I currently serve as co-chair of the EAN Scientific Panel on Higher Cortical Functions. My research focuses on the structural and functional correlates of cognitive and behavioral features in neurodegenerative disorders. This month's topic is the interaction between language and motor system, and in today's episode, we will talk about language, the bridge between a noisy world and a stable mind. My guest today, and is my pleasure to introduce him, is Professor Dr. Cornelius Bailar. He's a full professor and medical director of neurology at the University Medical Center of Freiburg, an internationally recognized expert in stroke and cognitive neuroscience. His work has advanced our understanding of brain reorganization and the neural architecture of language. Welcome, Professor Bailar, and thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Eliza. I'm really flattered by your introduction. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. And let's start. This is a very interesting topic. How does the brain interact with the environment?
Yeah, it's really a tricky question, Elisa, and my group and myself and many other people thought about this for quite a long time. I mean, the key question is, we are really in a dynamic, noisy environment which completely changes every second around us. And still we have rather stable, invariant internal concepts which we have to adapt and should be flexible, but we still have them inside, independent of what happens outside from us. So how does the brain transform this dynamic sequence from the external world into the stable internal concepts, and how to make those concepts communicable? That's actually the question. We perceive the external world through our senses as sequences. Speech unfolds as a sequence of sounds, syllables, words. The brain encodes visual spatial percepts as vectors or trajectories, and motor output relies on the sequential activation of muscle groups in articulation, gesture, and action. Well, we know in the brain that the so-called dorsal pathway, which includes the arcuate fascicle, is specialized for the processing of sequences in time and space. It supports the mapping between perception and action, and the retrieval and storage of sequences. So, for instance, between heard speech sounds and articulatory sequences. This means the dorsal pathway is closely linked to the external world, which is time-dependent. It's the interface. Or, in one sentence, the world reaches the brain as sequences. The brain must transform them into stable structures for thought and action.
Very interesting. Is it this the same capacity used for recursivity, counterfactual thought, imagery, and also embodiment?
Well, the dorsal pathway is not sufficient for that. It's true that offline simulations with sensory motor networks in motor imagery have the same structure as the online motor actions. So that's true. You require the dorsal pathway for offline simulations. But what all these capacities require is a detachment from the immediate sensory context. Recursion embeds structures with structures. Counterfactual thoughts about things which are not present, and imagery activates internal representations without direct input. So So for this, you need an internal closed loop within the brain, something which is able to leave the sequences move forth and back without any external drive, any external inputs. For this, you need also control, you need selection. All this has been done internally, and this is not sufficient with a dorsal pathway alone. So at the end, we propose a tripartite structure. And I will explain this later on. We have a dorsal pathway, which is used for sequences. We have the ventral pathway, which is the IFOF, the uncinate fascicle and the frontal temporal fascicle, which is required when you have to relate items based on structure. And these two pathways join in two hubs, anatomical regions where they're both ending. And in these hubs, the two distinct processing streams, the analysis of sequences for the external world and the structural relation, are merged. This allows you to control, to select, and yes, and to abstract these sequences, these internal sequences, without any external input. So what you need for detachment from the immediate sensory context is an internalization. You have to internalize what you do externally. And for this, you need a closed loop in the brain, which is able to perform this internalization internally. The dual loop model with the dorsal and ventral pathways with hubs in the frontal cortex and the posterior cortex is actually the nice thing which allows you this internalization. Yes, recursivity, counterfactual thought, imagery have something in common, which is the detachment from the immediate sensory context, and indeed you require a structural analysis in conjunction with a sequential analysis in a closed loop in the brain. This was very complicated, Elisa.
Sure. So you capitalize on the hub feature. Why this is so important for this mechanism?
Well, the hub feature is one thing is, as I just said, yet only with the hub feature you get a closed loop inside the brain. And the other thing is, cognition emerges from interaction. And cortical regions are not isolated functional modules, but in the association cortex at least, these are interaction hubs, convergence zones of diverse processing streams. So when you go to language, you go to the lateral ventral premotor cortex. And the lateral ventral premotor cortex is the junction point of the dorsal stream sequences with the frontal aslant tract, which connects to the SMA for initiation and timing. So through this conjunction in the lateral premotor cortex, we are able to produce a timely, adequate production of speech. So this gives you the initiation and the timely correct sequences of sounds for articulation. Or, as we said before, inferior frontal gyrus and middle temporal gyrus, somebody called it Broca and another one called it Wernicke about 150 years ago, are two regions which form the hubs of sequence processing and structural relation along dorsal and ventral pathways. This is what actually the Greek word syntax means, order together. So they are required for syntax. Now, what we are left out so far are the concepts.
Yeah.
And for these abstract concepts, Karen Patterson, Matt Lambert-Ralph proposed the hub and spoke model with the anterior temporal lobe as a hub, as an amodal hub with the highest hierarchical features. Now, in the hub and spoke model, you have the idea that all the information from the posterior association cortex, visual, auditory, temporal information, is not only integrated, but is transformed into an abstract entity, a concept. Now, we think this is mediated by the middle longitudinal fascicle. The middle longitudinal fascicle, what we like to call in the future the caudal pathway, connects all the information from the posterior association cortex down to the anterior temporal lobe. This means you have here a hub for called an amodal hub. Well, this is not a hub as we understand it. I said before, hubs must be convergence zones of large association tracts. Now, the anterior temporal lobe is not only connected along the middle longitudinal fascicle, but also along the uncinate fascicle with the inferior frontal gyrus. And then you come again to the ability for a structural relation of the ventral pathway. So when you combine the ventral pathway with the caudal pathway, you combine the abstraction ability with the structural relation. And that is what is needed for concepts. Concepts are hierarchically organized. And for hierarchy, you need a structural relation which is independent of the moment, independent of the position in the sequence. So the ventral pathway has a double use. It's used together with the dorsal pathway for syntax, for formal syntax, green ideas sleep furiously, while it's used together with the semantic features of the caudal pathway for concept formation and for comparison of new impressions with existing concepts. So to relate the sequences of this dynamic sequences of the external world to our abstract invariant concepts, you need a tripartite structure. You need a dorsal pathway for sequences. You need the caudal pathway for semantic features. And in between, you need a pathway which is able to relate elements based on structure, independent of their position in the sequence. And this enables hierarchy and invariant structure. So these are the three streamlines. And these streamlines have to come together in the convergence hubs. By chance, this is ironic, by chance, these are the classical language zones. Broca, Wernicke, and anterior temporal lobe, which is not a classical language area, but it's really required for conceptual thought. The hub is really important because convergence is probably one thing which the human brain does especially good. It brings together processing streams. I'm not saying that chimpanzees cannot do this, but we are probably very good at that. So convergence is really a hallmark, not specific or exclusively, but a hallmark of the human brain. So hubs are important.
Very, very interesting, Cornelius. How many hubs we have in this circuit? So there are three, understand correct. And we, all of us, have the same hubs, the same number. What about if I am multilingual?
Yeah, it's not only the multilingual, it's that this model is definitely not language specific.
Okay.
So you, as we all know, the anterior temporal lobe has linguistic and non-linguistic concepts. As we all know, the inferior frontal gyrus is required to compare entities, doesn't matter what it is. So most likely, when there is a specificity at all, it should be in the posterior parts of the brain. It seems likely that the middle temporal gyrus, which is close to the superior temporal gyrus, is specialized for auditory stuff. Mm. The supramarginal gyrus seems to be more related to technical reasoning to the steric tool, but in tool use, it's very common. For reading, you probably need more posterior areas. And for bilingual brains, there are, of course, the very divergent ideas, as you know, whether it's in the left hemisphere on different parts of MTG and STG, or it's on the right hemisphere. You have these structure in both hemispheres, and they are interconnected. They are interconnected in the posterior and anterior hub, so in EFG, and here in case of language, in MTG. But MTG is really relatively language-specific, while more parietal areas are more used in visospatial processing and SMG, supramarginal gyrus, in the tool use. So it's not specific at all, and you also know that the music uses the same network. I think the ability to translate between sequences in space and time, or in time and space, and abstract concepts, is on the basis of most cognitive thoughts. These hubs are also involved in the default mode network, in the multiple demand network, in the theory of mind network. So all these regions, all these what we call functions, rely more or less into various degrees and extent on the same basic structure, on the same tripartite structure. Just one thing I wasn't perhaps entirely clear, it's really Broca, Wernicke, and RTL, yes. But you also have the STZ, the superiotemporal gyrus. This is the interaction of the dorsal with the caudal stream for retrieval of phonemes. And we have, as I said, the interaction of the dorsal stream with the lateral premotor cortex for articulation.
Out of the curiosity, which is the role of the right hemisphere? I mean, we are thinking is not just about language. This circuit is important for the translation of sequences and time in abstract concept. But which is the role of the right hemisphere?
Okay, so this is not my topic, and I'm really getting a slippery surface now. But in our stroke data, this same system seems to be very important for neglect. Mm-hmm. And while the dorsal right pathway is more involved in extinction, the ventral pathway seems to be quite important in neglect. And with ventral pathway, please note, I mean the connection between the frontal lobe and the posterior lobes. I'm not talking about a ventral pathway which ends in anterior temporal lobe. This is what I mean, in the original description, at least, of Mako, there was this frontal extension, but many people now see the ventral pathway ending in anterior temporal lobe. This is not what we think. This would be the caudal pathway, in our words. Is it really important to have the frontal connections, to have a frontal interaction with the dorsal pathway and the posterior interaction? And for neglect, it definitely is needed. It's probably used in music as well. It's not much used in tool use. In tool use, you only have the dorsal pathway of the right hemisphere. You don't need the ventral pathway in tool use. And what the RTL in the right hemisphere really does, I don't know. It's not a semantic modal hub. It should be a conceptual hub. Tim Schellis has worked on that. No, the right hemisphere, you see, you're getting me on a slippery surface. But neglect definitely requires the same system. Let's say when the system is damaged, you get neglect, put it this way.
Let's move from single brain to social interaction. So far, we were dealing with a single organism. Imagine two organisms with the same capacity, internal closed loop. These two organisms meet. What does it mean?
This is where language becomes social. If two organisms can structure internal concepts into communicable sequences, they can align their internal worlds. They can communicate about absent objects, the past, the future, possible worlds, plans, and social rules. And this is where Daniel Dorr's idea of language as an instruction of imagination fits very well. as I'm citing here now, language allows collaborative computations of information that people did not experience together by instructing the imagination of another mind. One brain can guide another brain to construct a mental representation. And if you want to extend this to Joseph Heinrich's idea that human advantage lies not in individual brain power, but in the collective brains of our communities. So we can develop a culture because we are teaching and we are accepting things from other people which we haven't experienced ourselves. When two organisms with the same capacity meet, language becomes a way of aligning internal worlds. I can use structured sequences of sounds which I hear or which I produce to make you, Elisa, to construct a concept, an image, or in a scenario in your own mind. And this is a basis for, as I said, for culture, for shared knowledge, and for teaching.
And we can do that because we share the same hubs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the same neural system.
And this takes a while. I mean, according to the data from Daniela Perani and Angela Federici and Bauer, this develops, and Lev Vygotsky actually said the same a couple of years ago, that this capacity has to develop. And it develops this closed loop, just emerges around the age between 4 and 6. At the same time when people or kids are able to understand and produce complexer syntaxes and when theory of mind develops. So only when this closed loop is closed, which requires an extension of the arcuate fascicle into the hub area in the frontal cortex and also to MTG, only when this loop is closed, then we develop this ability.
This interaction between two organisms, it works better if I'm familiar with the other person, I'm more familiar with that, or works anyway with any person?
I think this is a wide question. Familiarity really is something which is mostly done by the dorsal and caudal pathway. So you retrieve familiar things and you can recognize this. You require the ventral pathway only when you really have to make new associations. Let me give you an example. When in the sentence, he found the key to her heart, it's easy to understand. In the end, she wanted to key his car, to scratch his car with a key. So then you really have to make the new relation. This is not familiar, and you have to make a new relation between subjects, between words, the concept of the key, and so on. So, yes, familiarity gives you the high advantage of a rapid access.
Sure.
But if you lose the ability to make new connections, to make new relations, you lose the ability for generalization, for abstraction, for flexibility. So actually what is decisive to survive in a changing world, and this can be a stroke, this can be Alzheimer's or slowly progressive aphasia, this can be Parkinson or MS, is to retain the ability of abstraction and generalization. So our prediction would be that for compensation in degenerative disease, or for recovery from stroke, these are the structures which are really important. Besides the cortical spinal tract that you have to move, be able to move your arm and so. So I think that these are the cognitive, these are the anatomic prerequisites which require you to cope with new situations. So familiarity is nice and quick, but you need more to survive.
What is the difference between the neuroscience understanding of internal abstract concepts and Wittgenstein's proposal of concepts as rules of use embedded in our linguistic practice?
Yeah. Okay. This is I mean, I think it's important that neurologists at least, and definitely behavioral neurologists, should look at that. Neuroscience tends to ask, how are concepts represented in the brain? We look for distributed transmodal representations, semantic hubs, and neural systems that support abstraction. Wittgenstein's view is very different. He says, or he thinks, that concepts are not just internal mental objects. They are embedded in use, shared practices, familiarity, and then rules that determine whether a word is used correctly or incorrectly. And these concepts are public domain. They are normative, even. Meaning depends on use within a linguistic community. The brain structures internal concepts with a communicable form, and linguistic practice stabilizes shared meaning. To understand that the meaning of a word means a lot to me requires a normative approach. This can be without, I mean, you can value this as good or bad, but it's a normative approach. We know now what a Zoom conference is, and we have to really share. The concepts are developed culturally. Concept of freedom, concept of democracy, concept of peace.
Just the final question about language specificity. So is this brain architecture in any way specific for language or not? And if at all, which parts may be rather language specific?
Yeah, I tried to answer this previously. This three-parted structure, dorsal, ventral, and caudal pathways in the brain of the long association tracts was in part presented by Dejerine already, but this structure is in every brain, and so almost many cognitive domains must use this. There is nothing else they can use. So we find this in our studies over and over again in many, many different modalities. There are slightly differences, and it depends on the tests used. I mean, the test design often is more important than the function you want to look at. So when you look at the comprehension tests and the Aachen aphasia test or the token tests, you would tell me, yes, this is comprehension, but there's also working memory and so on. Yeah. Well, the most pronounced difference to these main network are frontal streamlines. And this is because this is a multiple choice design. You have to select, you have to compare. So the design of the test is sometimes more decisive than the function of the test. So this is one thing that we probably don't test real specific functions. Yes, of course, these dual loop model supports action, tool use, music, planning, and relational cognition. It's the main general. And it's really difficult to tell you at the moment what is specific. I think inferior frontal gyrus and RTL and lateral premotor cortex definitely are domain general. I think posterior MTG is rather language specific, and more parietal areas are more specific for visuospatial tasks, which may include tool use and probably also visuospatial attention. Gaiser can show us the architecture of language when we look at the connections, because looking at the connections is much better and easier provides you the underlying structure than looking to ever finer parcellations. And the classical language areas shouldn't be defected. They remain important. But we should reinterpret them as convergence hubs, where anatomical pathways come together. Therefore, they are able to integrate or to combine processing abilities. And they, in my mind, they integrate sequence processing, structural relation, and concepts. And this integration allows thought to become communicable.
Thanks, Cornelius. So interesting. I finish with all my questions. So I learned from you today, and I hope all our listeners, that how the brain interact with the environment, that environment is dynamic, but our brain is able to transform the dynamic into invariant concepts, and that there are specific apps for that, specific for language, but also specific for abstract concepts that are not also related to language. So we are able to order some dynamic word into sequences and custom knowledge that we have. And in this last part, we were able to understand which is specific for language and which is probably not, and how we can interact with all this incredible structure and structural connectivity with others also in the social interaction. Thanks again, Cornelius. Do you have to add anything else?
No. Thank you very much, Elisa. It was really very nice chatting with you, and I think we should continue this discussion outside of this podcast.
Absolutely. I'm ready for that.
Have a good time.
Yeah. It has been a very pleasure again to talk to you today. This is a very important and interesting topic. And I would like also to thank you, all our listeners, for their attention. And see you soon at the EIN.
This has been EIN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.